The Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and families closer together, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we got Will Meadows.
Sarah Meadows.
Kevin Delp.
Melissa Delp.
Ryan Pills.
Katie Pills.
Jonah Dew.
In the houses.
Yep.
Houses.
We're going to figure out how to synchronize that one of these days.
Yeah.
Another exciting week of playing lots of board games in different places and getting together online to be able to connect and record the podcast. We're so glad that you guys are joining us today, though. So thanks for tuning in for another, what will hopefully be exciting episode. We got it packed full of different segments for you. We've got some news and a bunch of the Kickstarters, some Mad Meeples, all kinds of fun stuff. Some of the games that have been making it to the table in the Meadows house recently.
Sonora.
Yeah, we get to play a flick and write this week, which was pretty neat.
Yeah, I realized I played this last night with a couple of gamers in the area. We got together for a game night, and I realized that some of these roll and writes, you're using a random input of dice and then mitigating or doing something, scoring off of them. And this one, you're flicking a disc into the center area. So it's a little less random than dice because you can kind of place your discs where you'd like them. But there's always the opportunity for other players to flick the dice to somewhere you don't want them to, or flick your discs somewhere where you don't want them to be.
Yes, kinda is definitely the the word in there, because you can definitely aim. You've got kind of a square with corners cut off, space shape that's divided into four quadrants that you're trying to get your discs into, and one powerful flick from another player can send everybody's tokens in different directions. But it was very interesting. I felt like we played a two-player game, and then Sarah got to play a four-player game. How different was four players?
Well, there's one area of the board that you score, and it's kind of first come, first serve. You just count up however many your total is of your discs, and then you mark off little spaces, and they're kind of grouped together, so the bigger groups are worth more points. And the player who went for that very aggressively ended up winning the game.
Ooh, good to know. I will remember that strategy for the future.
So it kind of kept the other three players from getting the high number points off of that. So we tried focusing on it. Now, three people, it was a learning game. So, yeah.
So for the quadrants, do each quadrant score differently? Or yes. Do you have a paper that you're writing, like a roll and write, you're writing on paper? Do you have something that represents the quadrants on your board, or how does that work?
Yeah, so there is a
dry erase sheet.
It's a decent size sheet, and it has the four quadrants that match the board, and there are spaces, and each area is going to be different. So there's one that it almost looks like a crossword puzzle. And you will, there's five different shapes, and you have a disc one through five. And depending on which disc you're scoring, you'll put that shape in, and you're trying to cover certain areas. There's one that's like a path, and you mark spaces down the path, and then the last space you get to score. And then the other one is this triangle grid. And you're trying to outline areas. So if you completely fill in the outside edge of a triangle, whatever is inside, you'll get to score that. So you'll start in the middle and then go out from the middle. And so obviously the edge pieces are going to score a lot more than the inner pieces. And then there's the other space that I talked about where you're just filling in groups and trying to get a group completed first.
Yeah, and you're filling them in based on each of the discs that you're flicking has a number on it. And so if your 5 disc ends up in the top right red quadrant or whatever, blue, I don't even know what color they are, then you get to fill in 5 spaces on your dry erase sheet. So it's pretty interesting. When you first start playing the game, you're just kind of flicking the tokens and like, yeah, okay, I'll flick all 4 of them into this one quadrant so I can use a lot of actions in there. But then like most good roll and writes, you've got some things where they kind of chain and engine build. And so you kind of, it doesn't hurt to spread out a little bit because you're going to be able to gain those bonuses that allow you to fill in spaces on other sides. And it was an interesting twist on the roll and write, and it was definitely beautiful. Like, I really enjoyed the art style. It's got a very minimalist, flat vector, desert feel to it. Really nice color scheme. Looked really, really sharp.
Yep.
A lot of fun.
Definitely enjoyable. I was
really interested in this because I did my top 10 most anticipated games for 2020, and this was one of the top 10, one of the ones in the 10. So I hope this doesn't become a war chest for me. So
I can see it coming out to the table quite a bit. I think Melissa would thoroughly enjoy it.
Speaking of war chest,
I'm looking forward to it.
Speaking of war chest, what?
Tell us about your experiences, Jonah.
Yeah, so last night, Chantel and I decided to get in a nice game of war chest, and in the middle of the game, she had to tend to the little babies in the house. So Will stepped in to play for Chantel, and let's just say we have to attribute the loss to both of them, Chantel and Will. And they got their butt.
I mean, I don't want to blame anybody. I don't feel like there was a lot of hope when I was coming in. Yeah, Jonah had a great little combination of cards going and was already pretty dominant on the board when I stepped in. I feel like I staved him off a little while, but it was a pretty hopeless scenario.
It was pretty hopeless in the second game you played because you played with me and 2 other guys. And
that was quick.
Yeah, it was 4-1 real quick at the end. And Will didn't do well on that one either. Usually he didn't wins well. This game. So, well, 4-1 is not very close.
I don't even know what you mean by 4-1. We had putting 3 bases and you had 5?
No. We had 4 that we had to add to the board. So there were 6. And you had 3-6.
3-6. It was a sneaky one. It came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Kevin, did you get to play anything besides not War Chest?
Yes, we were able to play a few games in a Back to the Future theme. This license has become available to publishers, so it seems like there are quite a few publishers publishing Back to the Future games, and Melissa wants to talk about a couple of them.
So, okay, I'm going to try to keep them straight in my mind because there are 2 by 2 different publishers.
That are both co-op dice games.
Nice. Yes, one is by Ravensburger, and that is Back to the Future Dice Through Time. And it's a cooperative game. Both of these games are cooperative. And you have all 4 time periods from the 3 movies in the trilogy. And you are trying to get items that are in the wrong basically timeline back to where they belong. So the hoverboard might be in the Old West in 1855 instead of being in 2015, even though we don't have hoverboards.
Man.
But that's okay.
it's not okay.
So you're rolling dice and you're trying to match symbols on objective cards, event cards to complete those events and then collect the items that you need to take them where they go. And of course, there's a Biff in every single timeline.
Gets in the way, Biff.
That you have to knock out before you can do stuff. And
it's a pick up and deliver game. So it's like you're picking up in one area, trying to get to the other area. I kind of like this one because everyone's in control of their own time, their own DeLorean. So, you know, Melissa had the pink DeLorean. I had like the orange DeLorean, and basically you're flying through and you can't like.
If you end up on this same space as another DeLorean, it's going to move your out of time tracker.
Yeah.
Forward.
You get these paranormal things going on and yeah, not good. Not thing. Paradox. Paradox thing.
Yeah. And one of the interesting things in this game is if there's dice that I don't need, I can leave them in my location and basically they're a column. So it's like, Hill Valley High through all of the
years,
centuries, years, or whatever would be in that space. And so anyone later in the time stream could use those dice if they're in that same location.
Which is pretty cool, like thematically. Hmm.
So that was Dice Through Time. The other one is by The Op.
Mm-hmm. And no, by Funko Games.
Oh, sorry. Funko Games, and it is Back in Time, Back to the Future. Wow, Kevin, your turn.
Back to the Future, Back in Time. And it's so, this is really funny because it's so similar in names that I actually was totally confused before I actually saw both covers. I thought there was only one co-op dice game. Oh no, there's two Back to the Future co-op dice games. And that's only two of many other Back to the Future games that are coming out soon from many different publishers. So I don't know how this is all working with licensing and stuff like that. But anyway, the Back to the Future Back in Time from Funko Games
is cooperative. And it takes place, it all takes place in the first movie. So basically you have, 1955 Hillvale. And you have George and Lorraine and Biff, and each person is playing a different character. You have Doc Brown, mm-hmm. Jennifer,
Einstein,
Marty, and Einstein the dog. Nice. And they have a special power. You have these tokens that represent your actions, and they're going to have a specific die face on them. So you can flip those tokens to roll certain dice or flip them to move. It's your choice what you do with those tokens. But basically, you have several objectives that you need to meet before the game ends or you lose. And one of those is to get the DeLorean to Doc Brown's house, get it situated with the hook and other things. So there's like three items.
And it had the plutonium and all that kind of stuff to power. I mean, you got to power the time machine.
There's no plutonium back then.
I was going to say, was that in the movie?
That's true.
You're getting games confused.
I sure am.
Wow. You got to get the flux capacitor.
It has three different components that you need to get. Yeah. You need to get them on the DeLorean, and then you need to get the DeLorean to the clock tower in time.
Yeah, to the street where,
You also need to get George and Lorraine to fall in love.
There's a love meter.
And so you have to roll certain dice to get them to fall in love. But then there's Biff. If Biff gets in the way, he's going to take the love meter down. And as the love meter goes down, you're going to lose pieces of the photograph of Marty and his siblings.
Which is really thematic because because you're actually like losing the photo. There's like six to eight pieces of the photograph. They're like, oh no, oh no, oh no, the photograph.
We just lost his head. He lost his legs.
But the thing about this game, the Back in Time, is on the each die, there's two Biff icons on everybody's die. There's two Biff icons. So every time you roll a Biff, there's no way to re-roll Biffs, mm-hmm. which is terrible.
Well, what is the there's Biff tokens that you can get to reroll Biffs.
Well, Biff is a bully.
Right.
Keeps showing.
What does the Biff icon look like? Because I feel like in my imagination, it looks like the Board Game Geek logo.
It is the Board Game Geek logo.
I was just imagining it. I was like, flat top.
Yeah. No, I mean, so it's really hard to reroll Biffs. You can get a token that lets you reroll, but it's very difficult. But you're rolling Biffs so many times in the game because Ryan could probably help us with the statistics, but you have dice where two faces out of six, so that's 33%.
The hashtag too many Biffs was trending.
It was definitely not good. I did not like the game because I was like, I'm just rolling Biffs all the time and I can't re-roll them and I'm not able to do my actions. I was getting frustrated, whereas the other game with from Ravensburger, they have levels of difficulty, which I thought was very good in how difficult do you want to make the game, how many items do you want to turn in and stuff like that. So I appreciated that in Ravensburger, the difficulty levels was up to the players to decide how difficult, where I felt the Funko game, there was like, it's one difficulty and it's super hard.
Yeah, it's definitely difficult. There were interesting things in the game, interesting mechanics. You could get these items. You could get more tokens for actions. But
I thought it wasn't play tested good enough.
I think there were too many biffs. You had to spend actions knocking Biff down, punching him to, you know, so he wouldn't stand up quite as quickly. But yeah, I enjoyed the other one, the Dice Through Time, a little better.
Cool stuff. Anybody else get anything cool to the table this week?
Well, I got to play a few games with our neighbor's children. We played a round of Rock, Paper, Wizards, which they thought was fun and were also really bad at.
It could be a tough one.
They were constantly changing. In that one, you're supposed to do different hand symbols that are shown on cards to try to, you know, use on opponents. And they kept changing their mind, who they were aiming at and what symbols they were using. I was like, all right, stop. All of you stop moving. Once you do it, that's what they've done. So there was a lot of cheating going on in that game. And then we also played Chicken Heist. They really enjoy that game. They love all the different chicken roles. Like you can be a little samurai chicken or a robot chicken. Or there's all sorts of random. I mean, it's just a cute and funny little game. And they really enjoy mostly just the chickens on that one. But we had a fun time doing it. They also don't understand that one super well. So they sort of just randomly decide what they're going to do each time rather than making an actual plan for the strategy for the game.
Got to get them started somewhere.
It's interesting for me.
Fun stuff. All right, well, let's take a moment to give a shout out to our sponsor.
This episode is sponsored by Holy Grail Games. Their game Rallyman Dirt is on Kickstarter right now, and last episode we had an interview about the game. We also now have a live playthrough of Rallyman GT, the first game, which will also be available in the Kickstarter that we did on July 2nd, and it should be on our YouTube channel so you can watch us play the game, see how the original Rallyman GT plays, and maybe hear a little bit about Dirt as well.
Good stuff. Let's turn it over to the news.
Today, we have three news items to report. First, in acquisitions, it looks like BGG, Board Game Geek, has acquired Tabletop.Events. A few months ago, it looked like Tabletop.Events was going to go under. And this is really important to us because TantrumCon and many other conventions use this website to host their events. So this is good news for many.
Second that.
On People Watch, Stronghold Games has announced that Stephen Bonacore is going to step down as president on August 1st, 2020. In 2018, Stronghold and Indie Boards and Cards merged to form Indie Game Studios, and now Stephen has decided that he would like to enjoy retirement. Another People Watch is that Will Wheaton, Wesley Crusher from Star Trek, or you might know him as the former host of Tabletop, is going to be a board game ambassador for Games by Bicycle. Bicycle Cards is now getting into the board game arena, and they have lots of games like Alpha and Exchange, and then some adult party games as well. And Will Wheaton is going to be one of the faces of the board game area.
In current events, Comic-Con is doing a virtual convention called Comic-Con at Home, July 23rd through 26th, 2020, and Board Game Geek has partnered with them to do some tabletop game coverage as well. Those are the three news items for today's episode.
Let's ramp it up with our Kickstarter conniption.
Kickstarter conniption!
This episode, we'll be talking about seven games coming to Kickstarter July 6th, 2020. Will, start us off.
All right, let's start it off by talking about Ascension Tactics, coming from Stoneblade Entertainment. This is from designer Justin Gray and Ryan Sutherland. It's a 1-4 player mix of genres. It's got some deck building and bag and pool building. It's also got some area control. I had an opportunity to play I don't know how early of a prototype it was, but a prototype of it at Gamma this past year, and it's got a really nice mix of mechanics in it. You have a team of characters that you're playing that are part of the Ascension universe. There's a bunch of minis. You've got a board that you're controlling, and then each turn you're also deck building as you play the game. So there's the typical store where you can buy additional cards from to stack your deck, and then you'll be using movement points and currency are the primary two things that are on your cards. You're going to be moving around the board trying to gain control of there's a number of different ways you can play it. The variant, the rule set that I played, you were trying to have control of three different bases. And so you're moving your characters in, trying to get there first, trying to duke it out with each other. The battle system for the game was really nice and straightforward. It wasn't like a dice-chucking, luck-reliant game. It was very much an area like strategy movement, and count your spaces out, get into the right spot, take out your opponents. I think the game has a solo variant. I think it has like campaign mode. It has I'm going to make up co-op. I should probably look through the whole list and see what's on there, but there's a bunch of different ways you can play the game. I think the thing that I enjoyed most about it was that it combined so many mechanics that I was familiar with that to jump into it only took us just a couple minutes to get the rules, and then we were playing a pretty hearty battle experience trying to optimize my deck, trying to control where my characters were, trying to, you know, just figure out how to beat my opponent at it. Very polished, very fun, and I think I was pretty early in the process too, so the artwork pictures that I'm seeing online look really cool. There's like, I'm not going to call them Falcor, but looks like Falcor. This
That's awesome.
Blue dragon flying guy with somebody riding on his head, and just some really cool looking minis in the game. The card artwork also looks pretty sick. I think these are probably, if you're an Ascension fan, these are probably characters that other people would be familiar with. I haven't actually played Ascension, but looks really, really sharp. Check that one out. Ascension Tactics coming to Kickstarter this week. Sarah, what do you got?
Coming to Kickstarter is Surrealist Dinner Party. If you think of surrealism art, like Salvador Dali, and just the weird and bizarre happenings in his paintings, think of that all mashed up into a little card game that is a set collection game about a dinner tea party. So the art for this is very interesting. It's got
surrealist.
Well, it's surrealist, but I was like, it has a specific color theme to it as well. It's most of the individual cards. These are prototype art that I'm looking at, but they have kind of a one or two color scheme to each of the cards that has a very interesting picture on it. And each card has items that you're supposed to try and gain, and all the cards have an individual power on them that allows you to do things like gain certain tokens from other players or try and get your character to pick up tokens from other characters at the table. And so this one is a very interesting. I would like to see how this one does because it is not the normal card art for a game.
This card art is creepy. You got like a guy's head and a bird. It's like really weird looking.
I don't mind. mind it. I kind of enjoy it, but then I also don't mind surrealism. So
this is the stuff of nightmares that probably Ryan can tell us about.
Well, you had the dream, Ryan.
Art is based on dreams. That's how it came about. So nightmares is not too far off of where surrealism started.
Uh-huh. Yep. So that is Surrealist Dinner Party from Resonim. And let's see, Kevin, what do you've got?
Mind Clash Games is launching Perseverance Castaway Chronicles on July 7th. You're discovering a living dinosaur world in a series of mechanically evolving strategy games. This game is for 1 to 4 players. It takes about 80 to 180 minutes to play. This introduces the first 2 episodes in a series of Euro-style dice drafting, dice placement games. The saga will continue over a course of 4 episodes. I'm not sure if that's going to be a separate Kickstarter, if they're going to unlock those throughout the Kickstarter, but it seems like this Kickstarter is mainly for those first 2 episodes. It tells the story of a group of survivors becoming a mighty civilization on a hostile island. The first episode, you're trying to develop and protect the foothold, the town of Perseverance, and the second episode, you've successfully defended your city, and now you're completing massive walls to stop the dinosaur onslaught. So those are the first 2 episodes. Mind Clash usually does really, really good on their production. They've done games like Tricerion and Anachrony, and those are really high quality games with their production.
I love both of those games.
Yeah, those are really high quality. We've never played Cerebria. That's another one that people might be familiar with, and I'm sure Perseverance will have the same high quality. I'm interested in it, and I love dice drafting Euro games, so this might be up my alley. I don't know about the theme, how that would work and how the episodes work, but I'm definitely interested in this one. Melissa?
So on July 8th, AEG is bringing their next card crafting game, and I love the card crafting games, Mystic Veil and Edge of Darkness. Their new one is Dead Reckoning, and this is a pirate merchant high seas themed game. And you have a hand of cards, your crew, I believe it's 12 cards, and you can upgrade them throughout the game so that they get better powers, but you can also place advancement cards into your card. So you'll never have more than 12 cards, but you'll be upgrading their powers and sleeving new advancements like you would in Mystic Veil or Edge of Darkness. And this game has the added aspect of sailing around the board with your ships, and you can land on islands, you can build strongholds on those islands, you can produce on them, you can get lots of guns and shoot other ships, you can attack merchant ships, which are cards. There's a lot of things you can do in the game to get points. There are different objectives, achievements that you're trying to unlock that will be worth points. And some of them deal with battling and sinking things. Others deal with producing a lot of things. So you can kind of choose different paths that you want to take in the game of how you want to get points. When you fight, you count up your cannons on your ship and on the cards that you've played, and you get these cubes and you drop them into sort of a cube tower. It's shaped like a giant sailing ship, and then it drops into this board that has different sections, and where your cube lands depends, determines the outcome of the battle. Some of the sections give you goods and coins. Other sections do damage to the other player, things like that. So it's an interesting battle technique because there is quite a bit of randomness in it, but I really enjoyed dropping cubes into the ship tower, even though it usually didn't.
Yeah, Melissa, I don't know why she was really fascinated with that ship tower and fighting and stuff like that. It's kind of interesting because she's not really the aggressive player normally, but in this game, she was like bring on the fights, battles, bring on the battles, bring on the battles. And then she would lose, and then she would do it again. And she wasn't like, she was fighting merchant ships, which is not, which is like a non-player character. It's an NPC in the game. So it's not like she's fighting me or fighting others. It's like, these merchant ships were just decimating her.
I just figured that I would have to win eventually.
it kind of works out nice, though. Even when you lose, you're still getting things, which is very helpful when you, where those cubes are landing. I personally really enjoy the theme of the game, where you're sort of building up your crew. Your crew is your hand of cards, and you're sort of upgrading them. I really like that in the game. It's really fun upgrading them, because with that Mystic Veil technique, adding in slots and upgrading to new and higher levels, you're getting more and more powerful. So it feels like you're getting a better and better crew as you go on the game.
Yeah, so Kevin and I do have a preview video of this that shows some of the prototype components and gives some of our thoughts.
I think it was our longest preview video we've ever done, 15 minutes long.
Whoa.
Wow. Did you demonstrate the tower and the cubes falling out?
Oh, yes.
In slow motion?
Yep.
Ooh. Okay, good.
That's fun.
It's on YouTube right now.
Yep.
So that is Dead Reckoning by AEG, designed by Jean Declare, who did Mystic Veil and Edge of Darkness, the other card crafting games. And I really enjoyed it. It's coming July 8th. Ryan, what are you looking at?
Coming July 7th, 2020, so 7-7-2020, is Shadow Kingdoms of Valeria from Daily Magic Games. This is another in their series of games set in the world universe of Valeria, but instead of playing as heroic characters, you are actually playing as some of the darker elements of Valeria. So you will be commanding gnolls and orcs, goblins, undead, and gargoyles. Mm-hmm. And each player has control of a warden of one of these evil folks. And on your turn, you'll go to one of five shrines and draft a die from that shrine, and then take that shrine's action, which might be like drawing one of the battle plan cards, or harvesting power gems, or getting gold, or hiring a champion to get special powers, or launching a battle. And the die that you draft represents one of those types of forces. So it might be like a goblin die or an undead die. You don't necessarily always want to go for the highest value die, because the value of the die, the face of the die, does have an effect on the action you're taking there at the shrine. So there's a little bit of balancing there, and also trying to balance how you spend your magic and gold on the different cards and so forth. So it looks like it could be a pretty fun game. There's some really slick fantasy artwork, which is fun, keeping with the style of the other Valeria games. So yeah, definitely check it out. Shadow Kingdoms of Valeria, July 7th. Katie, what do you got?
All right. Also coming July 7th is The Relics of Raja Vihara. If I said that right.
I'm sure that was correct, Katie.
Sounded good to me.
Raja Vihara.
This is actually one of the names we considered for our second job.
Raja Vihara Pills.
All right. The Relics of Raja Vihara. The more I say it, the better I think I'm getting at it. This is a solo game. And it is a puzzle-based game. And interesting in this is that it's grid movement, but it is also three-dimensional movement. So there's some 3D elements that you set up. It says there's over 50 levels that you can go through to solve these different puzzles. So it looks like it's going to have five different boards that you, it'll tell you how to set up obstacles, and then it'll have you try to move through and choose to slide, climb, push, these different 3D elements trying to solve the puzzle that it has set before you. It is a solo play adventure game. It also says that once you get to the end, that there is a way to unlock an infinite number of single play solo adventures that you can actually create yourself. So that sounds pretty interesting. The theme is, kind of like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom is sort of what it looks like. You know, you're in a temple, you're looking for treasure. There's also a bad guy that you're trying to face down as the final boss. But you're having to go through these puzzles and figure out how to do it. I know this is not even probably close, but for some reason it's reminding me of Chip's Challenge on like really old computer game. I don't know if anybody else has played that out there, but I enjoyed that. Also, I really enjoy puzzly figure it out games. So that is Relics of, now I'm going to mess it up, the last one, Relics of Rajavihara. July 7th. And Jonah, did you have something?
Sure did. So coming to Kickstarter on July 7th is the original Sherlock Holmes and his Baker Street Irregulars. So this is being put out by Baskerville Productions. And in my opinion, it looks pretty sharp. It looks pretty good. So it's going to play 1 to 4 players. It says it'll play in about 45 minutes. And it's a card drafting set collection game where you're playing as a detective trying to rival Sherlock Holmes at the same time. So it says that you're going to be able to kind of utilize the Baker Street irregulars to visit locations and to talk to or gather witnesses and to inspect artifacts. And you're trying to make arrests to secure your place as a legitimate rival to Sherlock Holmes. The cool thing about this game is that it's got lots of art. I think it's got like over 100 pieces of art, and they're all inspired by the original artwork of Sidney. I'm going to say it wrong. Is it Paget? Does anybody know? Is that how you say it?
I don't know.
Yes.
I think it is Paget. But anyway, it looks pretty cool. It looks pretty sharp. You card draft and you spend some of the tokens that you get with the irregulars to like acquire evidence cards. And then you can use the evidence card to arrest the villains. The villains are worth points. The game's kind of played over 4 rounds, and it concludes with bonuses based on how efficiently you used your irregulars during the game. And it's got some further kind of end-game points where you can accumulate points based on like your set collection and your hand collection, things like that. And then at the end of the game, it's funny to me, at the end of the game, you're crowned London's second greatest detective.
That's so funny.
You're trying to rival Sherlock Holmes in that one. But that is the original Sherlock Holmes and his Baker Street Irregulars. And that is coming to Kickstarter on July 7th from Baskerville Productions.
All right. It's Mike Davis's turn with the Mad Meeple.
Mike Davis is the Mad Meeple. Now it's time for why he loves it and hates it.
Hello, this is Mike Davis from the Game and Party Podcast, and this is the Mad Meeple segment. Today we talk about the game Subterra. Subterra plays from 1 to 6 players in about 60 minutes, is for ages 10 and up, and is published by Inside the Box Games, LLP. In Subterra, you are trying to escape from a cave by finding the exit before you get eaten by the horrors, or get killed by a cave-in, things like that happen in the cave. And now, I'd like to share with you why I love this game. The first reason I love Subterra is, it is a very different game every time you play it. That stack of tiles could have the horrors right at the top, or all at the bottom, and that makes the game very different every time you play. The second reason I love Subterra is, it's a cooperative game, and you must work together. You can't be selfish. You may have to spend some time saving your fellow cavers. And the third reason I love Subterra is, it gives you such a good tension. It feels like those horrors are coming after you. You feel like you really need to find the exit quickly. The tension in the game is awesome. And now I'd like to share with you why I hate this game.
The first reason I hate Subterra is selfish people. When you're like, please, just spend a second to heal me so I can make it out with you. Nope, I'm just running for the exit. Goodbye. That's so mean. The second reason I hate Subterra is the skill checks. The skill checks are just basically a flip of a coin. If you roll good on the die, great. If you don't, not so much. So the die can really affect the game. And the third reason I hate Subterra is the horrors are just little round discs. They should have made them like little monster meeples or something. And that's it, guys. That's why I love and why I hate Subterra. You've been listening to the Mad Meeple, Mike Davis.
That sounds pretty interesting. I've not actually played Subterra, but we'll have to check that one out soon. Mike's always got some interesting ones to chat about, and I always appreciate how he approaches it with the pros and the cons. I feel like I need to do more and more of that. One of the things that we did this past week where we, I don't know if it was a pros and cons, but gave people...
Speaking of pros and cons.
You guys have pros and cons?
Have you heard why it's hard to make a decision about joining the Bard College or the Thieves Guild?
I have not.
Because you have to weigh the pros and cons.
We all got the sound effect.
Oh.
This week we...
It's better written than spoken.
P-R-O-S-E.
Yes.
We...
Sorry.
Put out a vote this past week because one of the Kickstarter goals that we reached this past campaign was for a new segment that Kevin's going to be bringing to Kickstarter. He's going to be kind of wrapping up things at the end of the month and reviewing some of the campaigns that are coming close to an end and that he thinks are worth an extra shout out. We didn't know what to call that new segment though, so we put out a vote on our channel. And we had two different suggestions that we put out there. We had the Tantrum House Kickstarter Knockout. Ding! And the Tantrum House Kickstarter Last Call. And thank you guys all who voted and gave some feedback. It looked like we had a pretty overwhelming response. Have you guys...
I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. So the Kickstarter Last Call will be the new segment that Kevin puts together. When are you looking at doing that? I assume since June is already over by the time this goes
June's
live.
Over, yeah. And because we're still trying to get the name and stuff, that'll be the end of July. We will do the first one. It'll be live on YouTube, and we'll be going over a few... The plan is a few Kickstarters that are ending soon, maybe one that's in late pledge status, and, you know, get a couple other things up our sleeves that I'm sort of thinking about throwing in there. Are you can keep the graphic the same? We had some people commenting on the graphic, Will.
Yeah,
so,
I like the suggestions, so we might do a little playing with that. One of the designs was, like, more blue and red, and then the Last Call one was more red than it was blue, and some people mm-hmm. were saying they liked the design of one but the sound of the other, so yeah, cool. I'll probably make some tweaks, give you some motion action to choose from before we go live with that.
Well, I liked both of the designs. The Last Call was kind of cool because it looked like a sort of megaphone, so that was kind of cool. I like that.
It was fun, yeah.
Was that the plan? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. That's what I was going for. So that was good. Glad that translated.
I wanted to give a quick shout out before we move on to something else to our friend over at Grand Gamers Guild, Mark Spector. He just tweeted today about last week's episode. And I don't know if you remember our little fun thing that we did in the news segment about Groundhog Day.
Did he get it? Did it work?
But he said, very clever on Twitter. So I wanted to give a shout out and say thank you for saying that on Twitter, Mark.
Yeah, I'm glad to know someone out there is listening. One of the things that we've talked about recently, and I don't know when this will come to fruition, but we've done a couple of podcasts where we will like do a Facebook Live at the same time. And so we've thought about potentially bringing that back to the table once in a while. So we'd love to know your comments. I know that when we do a Facebook or a YouTube Live while recording the podcast, that we have a tendency to, I don't know, ramble on and probably makes Ryan's editing job harder.
I think if we do it right, I think we could do a YouTube Live, and that way people could be looking forward to it every Monday night at a certain time. Like say we did it at 9 p.m. People could be tuning in on YouTube and they could look sort of look forward to that. That might be something fun to do. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got a couple kinks to work out and some things to try to figure out, even just with our schedules. But I think that's something that we are going to consider doing again in the future. So keep an eye out for announcements about that. Even if we don't do it every week, I think we'll definitely start making it a more regular thing so we can kind of interact with some audience people and just so you guys have an opportunity to see us in our natural environment. Which is actually, let me tell you the truth, it's a little scary right now. I forgot time was slipping away from me. So right now, my haircut is halfway done.
Will cuts his own hair, and he realized in the middle of giving himself a haircut that, oh, we have to record the podcast in 10 minutes. I guess I'm going to pause and come back.
So hopefully no one will ever be the wiser, but for all the listening audience... Definitely got a face for radio or hair for radio tonight. Well, hopefully you guys had a good time tuning in with us. I know these episodes have been getting a little bit longer and longer, and Sarah's also given me that I want to add one more thing.
Yeah.
So before I say goodbye, what do you got?
Be watching. Very soon we're going to give our Kickstarter backers a chance to make their selections over the next week or so after hearing this podcast. But we will open up late pledges for those of you who missed our campaign, and that will be on GameFound. So if you're interested, head over to the campaign. There will be a link there very soon.
Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Hope you had a great time. Hope you're doing well, staying healthy, playing some board games. And hopefully, we'll get a chance to connect with you guys very soon. Bye!
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or... send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.